You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As we continue to reflect on some of the best conversations on Insight so far this year, we turn to a unique center of healing for veterans and first responders in Sacramento that struck a chord with us and still brings one of our producers to tears by the end of it. The Center for Post-Traumatic Growth in Rancho Cordova offers treatment for moral injury, a new field in psychology which differs from PTSD. In April, I spoke with Dr. Melinda Keenan, a psychologist and executive director of the nonprofit, which opened its doors just before the pandemic, and since then, dozens have completed or are on their way to unparalleled healing. Let's start from the beginning. What were you seeing in your field that was lacking and ultimately led to this center?
Yeah, well, as you said, I was a psychologist in the VA system for a number of years, 19 years, and I was aware of some crucial gaps in the services offered. For example, family treatment. We were really looking at a model where we were treating the veteran without the family. And I think that the family obviously is crucial to healing folks with trauma. Yeah, you can't treat someone with trauma in a vacuum. So that was one thing. The other thing is that as I worked with the veterans over the years, we started to understand that there was more to trauma and the injuries that trauma inflicts on people beyond sort of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, okay? Beyond anxiety, beyond the hyperarousal, and that there were really some deeper core issues that were in these folks, really a soul wound, okay? Mm. Something much deeper. And so the field has finally started to come around to this idea that there are these core issues of unresolved loss, guilt, and shame. And they've started to look at that, and they've termed that moral injury. And so moral injury is something that happens in people of service who are exposed to traumatic events in which they are forced by their role to break their own moral values. And so specifically how we conceptualize moral injury in our program is that it's a broken relationship between people. Okay, so you feel as if you've perpetrated harm in some way against somebody else, either through action or inaction. So the program that we use at the Center for Post-Traumatic Growth is one that I developed with my colleagues over these 20 years of talking with veterans and first responders. Okay, so this is a bottom-up program. Mm. This is what they have taught me about what they need. This is not a top down where the psychologists up in the ivory tower, you know, say, this is what we need to do to heal you, right? This was about what they taught me.
And as you so well put it, I mean, it's healing their soul, and it's a new field of psychology. You spent nearly 20 years with the VA. How did you discover moral injury?
Well, that's the thing, is that we haven't really discovered moral injury. Moral injury is something that's been around since people have been around, mm. Okay? So you can go back into the ancient text, look at the Greek tragedies and things, and so much of the writings there is about moral injury, is about when people go to war or people hurt each other or do things bad to one another, that there are emotional consequences for that. And so I think that it's just taken the field this long to really sort of grapple with this and identify this as an issue, because we've been so focused, I think, on the post-traumatic stress problems and symptoms. Now, don't get me wrong, post-traumatic stress exists and is a true thing and is a very painful condition also. But I think that the treatment approach that we've used with post-traumatic stress is kind of almost like a 30,000 foot flyover. And the moral injury is really more of a deep dive down into, again, what it means to be a human being. You have to grapple with spiritual issues, you have to grapple with moral issues, and what it means to be human and to feel like you've failed or harmed somebody. So it's not a symptom reduction kind of approach. It's much more of a you know, like I said, a deeper dive into these issues.
Yeah, rebuilding bonds that maybe have been broken between human beings. And what you're talking about is the shame that disconnects people and comes along with making those decisions as a result of being a veteran or being a first responder. When you were listening to veterans at the VA, I mean, you touched upon this, but if you can expand, what did you learn from them in terms of moral injury when you're like something clicked with you and you created this center?
Well, I think, again, it was sort of a longer term process of me really getting to understand what the core of their pain is, you know. So a lot of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, for example, are skill sets that people learn in order to survive combat or trauma too, you know. But these other issues are things that have to do with being a person of service. And what makes you good at being a person of service is what makes you vulnerable to moral injury. So it's the most principled, competent, you know, honorable people that get wounded so badly because of this. So they have to break these values that are so dear to them. And so one of the most important things that we do in the center is because we look at moral injury is broken relationships between people. Everything we do is around relationship. Okay. It's about rebuilding. It's about reconnection. Okay. So we do group treatment. And of course, at first, folks who've been traumatized don't want to do group because they feel like we're going to be putting them in there with a bunch of people who won't understand because they've already run into people who don't understand. Because if you haven't been there, but if you haven't experienced it, you really can't understand. So we put them in with what I call a group of worthy others, people who've walked the same walk, who have experienced the same things and who are grappling with the same kinds of issues. And so pretty immediately they go, oh, this is different. And they say, wow, you know, that person could be it, that person's in my head. That what that person said, I have said a million times to myself. So it becomes a really close knit group. And if you think about how veterans and first responders work, they work as a team too. They can consider each other family. They have really strong bonds. And so we treat as they fight, right? So that's a really important aspect of our program. And then the other aspect is many times these people, the injury, like I said, it's broken relationships between people. So something happened between you and somebody else, but very often that person could be dead or that person may be inaccessible to you in many other ways. So what we use is a letter writing technique because the letters allow the person who feels like they've hurt somebody or lost somebody to have their say to that person. And the letters, they transcend time and space and dimension, if you think about it, right? It goes out. So they write the letter and then what they do is they bring it in and they read it in the group. So they are putting it out into the universe. They are sharing it and they're sharing it with each other and with the person that the letter is to, okay? A lot of trauma programs will have them write a trauma account. So they write about the trauma. The letter writing is very different because they're writing to the person that is involved in their trauma. Mm. So again, that's where the interpersonal piece comes in. And that's where that's where our program is unique. Even the people that are talking about moral injury in the field, I think, have not personally figured out that particular piece of that this is between people. It's not an intrapersonal problem. It's not a problem just with the first responder. It's a problem of a broken relationship.
Yeah. And with that, it's not like people just live in houses with their doors closed in their own room. I mean, it doesn't work like that. I mean, there are families and loved ones that are part of this. How does this extend to family at your center?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can imagine living with somebody who feels like, you know, the way that they describe often their inner feeling is they say things like, you know, I'm a monster. I can't love. I have no heart. I became an animal. And they often feel like they don't deserve anything good and they don't deserve to be in society anymore. Okay. Or they feel like they've failed in some core way. So shame pulls them away from the healing part of their families, pulls them away from the healing part of relationships. So you can imagine what that's like to be the spouse or child of somebody of service that has that, is carrying that burden. And it ripples out across all aspects of their lives. And so, of course, the loved ones are in that really tight circle in the middle there, right? So they're very often affected by this. And so we do some work with them as well in terms of educating them about moral injury and post-traumatic stress and the fact that these folks are they're not broken. They're not, in fact, moral injury is not a diagnosis. It's not a, you know, it's a soul wound. It's what happens to people when good people are forced into situations where they feel like they've done harm. So, it's a soul wound. And so, the idea here is to help the families start to understand that and help the veterans and first responders realize that they're not alone and it's not that they're not a bad person. In fact, they're very good people. And that's exactly why they're there, because they're good people. You know, sociopaths don't get morally injured and they don't get PTSD, right? Because they don't have a heart and they don't have a soul and they don't have morals. But people, human beings, are the ones that, good human beings are the ones that get injured in these ways. Okay, so the family, it's really about education. And again, it's about getting them to reconnect with them and each other and to realize that they're not alone and they're in a community of people that are really, really special, actually. You know, they serve us selflessly and bear these wounds so that a lot of us don't have to.
To your knowledge, is this happening elsewhere? I know that moral injury, you know, it has been around cerebrally and discussions for a while. But in terms of what you are doing, was there a template or a framework that you could go off of?
No, no, this is just something that kind of evolved organically from my work with the veterans. And their discussions with me, sharing the realities of what they deal with and what they face day in and day out in their heads and their hearts. And the letter writing just sort of came to me as a way to connect these people together. Again, the relationship piece. And I think that is at the core of what's going on here. And like I said, there's not a lot of other programs that have kind of adopted that idea. I think they're still thinking about it as something that happens to a person of service. And so we have to just deal with that person and figure out a way for them to find some self-forgiveness, right? But in order to find self-forgiveness or to feel forgiven, I believe that the folks that I work with have to actually do something that makes them feel worthy of being forgiven or forgiving themselves. Okay. So the letter writing is a way to say, I did this to you. I'm so sorry. And please forgive me. You know, if I could have done it differently, I would have, or I wish I could have done this or that or the other, you know, but I couldn't. And so the most amazing part of this whole thing too, Vicky, is that almost always when they write these letters and they read them aloud, there is some event that occurs. I call it a transformation event. Some event that occurs in their lives that let them know that the person that they were writing to got the letter. Okay. Most often it's a dream of some kind where the person comes back to them in a way where, because typically with traumatic events, what happens is it gets burned into the limbic system. And so it's not a thought or a memory like regular memories. And so it plays like a DVD over and over and over. So the traumatic event, once it gets triggered, it just starts and it tells the story in the same way over and over. And there's something about the process of writing the letter and reading it aloud that I think shifts it out of that kind of trauma track, so to speak, And it allows them to access these people in a new way. Okay. So I think when we talked earlier, I think I told you one of the stories. I've got a few of them, but if you'd like me to, I can give you an example.
Yeah, please.
So I'll give you a little different one this time. So I had a Korean War veteran who was, he had a buddy, and his buddy was, they called him UT, and they both loved to fish. So they spent a lot of time talking about fishing. Okay. And so to pass the time. So anyway, one day they were out on a patrol, and they had a large truck with a 50 caliber machine gun mounted on the back. And the truck had a bunch of gasoline that it was carrying. And UT was on the gun, and a rocket propelled grenade came in and struck the truck with the gasoline, and it exploded, and UT was engulfed in flames, and my veteran saw him burn to death. In that process, my veteran also flinched and kind of ducked down behind the wheel of the car, of the truck. And so he labeled himself a coward, because he felt like if he hadn't done that, that maybe he could have stopped it, right? Maybe he could have gotten to UT. Now, we know in our head, right? Logically, the rocket comes in, there's no way he's going to be able to save UT, right? But this is the difference between moral injury and looking at understanding that that is going to be the response versus some of the cognitive therapies that we use for PTSD, where we try to reason through with people and say, well, you couldn't have done anything. That's what we say, right? But that doesn't translate to people's hearts and souls. They believe that, you know, that they didn't do what they should have done, okay? So in our approach, we say, okay, so you feel guilty. So what are we going to have them do, Vicky? What do you think we might have them do?
Write a letter.
Write a letter. And who would he write that letter to?
To UT.
Exactly. And what might he say in that letter?
I think he would apologize and say what he would have liked to have done better or a different outcome, and just really be open and vulnerable and share that with others in the group who have had their own unique experiences, but they're all connected by that sense of loss and guilt and shame.
Exactly. Very, very good, Vicky. Look, you're an expert already. And so anyway, yeah. And do you think it might be important for him to say to UT that he feels like a coward?
Yeah, I think that is important, because it's good to get that out and to kind of change the limbic system and that replaying DVD that's going on, breaking that momentum.
Exactly, exactly. And so whether we believe he's a coward, whether we believe he could have gotten to save UT, that doesn't matter. It's what he feels in his heart. And so we have to go with that, but give him the path to then ask for forgiveness from the person, the only person who can give him that forgiveness, which is UT, right? So the veteran read this story in the group. And of course, all the other folks in the group have very similar incidents, right? The details are different, but the core issues are still the same. So at the end, okay, he reads it aloud. A couple weeks later, he comes back and he said to the group, he said, I had a dream I want to share with you guys. And we said, okay. So he said, in my dream, I went out to my mailbox, and in my mailbox was a card. And he described the card open, you know, not like right to left, but it was an up and down one, right? And on one side of the card was a picture. And guess who the picture was?
UT.
Picture of UT. Was he burned? Was he re-burning? Was he dying over and over? No, he was smiling, right? Happy, healthy. And the card, in the card, he said that UT told him that he loved him and that he missed him and that everything was going great for him because he was living on a houseboat surrounded by fish.
Wow.
And he looked at me, my veteran, and he said, I know where that card came from. And he said, it came from heaven. So is he ever going to forget UT burning up? Is that ever going to go away? No. But what does he have now? He has literally a card and a picture from UT saying, I'm okay. I'm not burning. I'm living here on a boat surrounded by fish, and I still miss you and love you.
Wow. Dr. Keenan, we're going to end on that note. What a wonderful story. And thank you so much for all of the work that you do in starting this nonprofit.
Well, thank you so much for having me and letting me get the word out.
Yep, it's important. That was my conversation with Dr. Melinda Keenan, psychologist and executive director of the Center for Post-Traumatic Growth, which aired back in April. Still ahead, South Lake Tahoe is making a push to become a dark sky community. We'll revisit our conversation about how the designation can lead to healthier lives and brighter futures. You're listening to a special edition of Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.